The U.S. defense industry is large, complex, and competitive. It is also lucrative for those companies able to navigate it successfully. The American Society of Military Comptrollers helps bridge the gap between the boardroom and the battlefield while supporting transformation in the defense sector. The Business of Defense podcast brings you inside the companies working to achieve this directly from the business leaders and to understand how they create value for their companies and their customers. For more information on ASMC, visit asmconline.org.
Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Hello, my friends. How are you guys doing today? This is Emma Ito, one of your hosts, pronounced she, her, hers. And we are just now hitting one of my favorite Bookstagram booking, like, reading months. And that is Nonfiction November. Woo! That was my attempt at a, like, horn noise. No, but really, I, as a public historian, Nonfiction November is my favorite month to be on book social media, because I love seeing all of the nonfiction books that you guys are reading. This is me recommending to you guys, like, hey, you should read some nonfiction this month, or, you know, like, any month, but, like, especially this month. And, like, don't feel boxed in by one month, but I'm just excited. I hope some of you guys are taking some time to read history or memoirs or biographies or journalism or, like, anything, self-help, travel guides, like, whatever. I am here to support you in your nonfiction journeys. And I'm gonna just throw a few suggestions in, but, you know, like, don't feel like you have to take them. They're just a few to throw out there. And I will shout out some of the usual suspects, but I'm not gonna super go into them because I feel like they're often, like, thrown out there, but I'm still gonna mention them. Like, I think some of the ones we see often for Nonfiction November are maybe New Jim Crow, The Body's Not Apology, Braiding Sweetgrass, which are all fantastic books. And if you have not read them, this is a great time. Especially Body's Not Apology was one of the, actually Braiding Sweetgrass too, were both picks in past Feminist Book Box subscriptions. And they're, I mean, great, like, two of the best books that I've ever read of all time. But I also want to throw in, you know, like, maybe you want to challenge yourself a little more. Maybe you want some history books, right? Like, I've also been just nonstop listening to memoirs this year. I've been really into audiobook memoirs because it kind of feels like a podcast. Like, it feels like they're talking to me and telling me their stories. So I'm going to throw in some memoir suggestions as well. So just to get right into it, since I'm talking about memoirs, I definitely highly suggest one of the best memoirs I have ever read in my entire life, and that is Heavy by Kisei Lemon. Heavy is just an incredibly powerful just story of Kisei telling us about his life and sharing with us about his lifetime of just being in a large black body and having a black family and early experiences from being a kid all the way up to being a college professor. And I just thought it was such a incredibly powerful memoir, and highly, highly recommend. I read it last year. I'm probably going to do a reread in November for it. Especially, like, I tabbed some of these passages, so definitely revisiting the tabbed passages. And, you know, since we're in powerful memoirs, many of you have probably already read Know My Name by Chanel Miller. But, you know, again, one of the most powerful memoirs I've ever read. Both Heavy and Know My Name, I guess I am drawn to memoirs that I just sit on the couch sobbing, because they will both make you sob. And Know My Name is just, you know, for those of you who have read it, you know, it's the life story of Chanel Miller, who revealed herself as being Emily Doe in the case People versus Turner,
where she talks a lot about the trauma she went through and her experience of her sexual assault and trial against Brock Turner. And she's described it as an attempt to reappropriate her own narrative identity. It's one of those books that I think all feminists should read. And even though it's not an easy book, it's an important one. Okay, so along those lines, this is the last super, super intense memoir I'll mention, but it was, again, like one of the most powerful memoirs I listened to actually this year on audiobook was an older book. It came out in 2019, In My Own Moccasins, A Memoir of Resilience by Helen Knott. And it's just an incredibly powerful, moving memoir in which Helen shares so much of herself in it. And that's a thing with Heavy and Know My Name Too, is like, I'm just completely humbled that these people shared the deepest parts of themselves and like with us, which is incredibly powerful. For In My Own Moccasins too, please check the content warnings because it is not easy to listen to or read. Knott dives really deeply into her experiences with addiction and sexual assault as an Indigenous woman. But she also goes really deeply into the relationships with the people around her, and especially with her mother. And I've been reading a lot of memoirs that I feel like talking and relating and like writing about their mothers has been the like such a powerful experience to read, because there's so much there. Like, whether we have good relationships or bad relationships with our mothers, like, regardless, there's so many ways in which they can shape us potentially or not shape us. So yeah, I just wanted to throw that piece in there. And a side note, like the books that are coming to mind when I'm talking about this are Ocean Vuong's On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous and Michelle Zahner's Crying in H Mart. I think all three of these really dive deeply into relationships with their mothers. Okay, so moving on from extremely heavy, powerful, sad, amazing, incredible memoirs. You know, maybe you're not in the memoir mood. Maybe you just want some essays. And I feel that. I think that's exciting. Again, here for any kind of nonfiction journey that you're on. So let me just suggest, you know, one or two essay collections that I really enjoyed. One of which is The Collected Schizophrenias by Esme Wei-Jung Wong. And I just read this one last month, and it was pretty powerful reading it hand in hand with, I didn't plan this, but right after I read Tastes Like War, which is another memoir in which she writes about her mother who has schizophrenia. But it was really enlightening to read Tastes Like War after reading The Collected Schizophrenias, because Esme Wong's essays talks about her journey towards her diagnosis of schizophrenia and then all of the daily realities of life with mental illness. And I did listen to this one, and I ended up picking up the physical copy as well because there were a couple parts I wanted to flip back and forth from. And I just thought it was a really incredible essay collection, especially in diving into mental illness. So highly suggest that one. Would also like to throw in the mix of essays Amanda Leduc's Disfigured on Fairy Tales, Disability, and Making Space. Pretty quick read, too, so great to pick up for Nonfiction November. And Amanda really goes into talking about how in fairy tales, happy endings are typically the norm, as long as you are beautiful and able-bodied and walk on two legs. And so what she does is examine the ways fairy tales shape our expectations of disability, and also like thinks about a new world where disability is not a punishment or impediment, but operates as a way of centering the protagonist and helping them cement their own place in the story. So I really, really liked this one. And she also gives examples and examinations of like stories from like Brothers Grimm, but also Disney interpretations and disabled representation in today's media. So
great book of essays. Would also love to toss in the suggestion of We Too, which is a book on essays on sex work and survival. It's edited by Natalie West. And this was another one that I was just completely humbled to read. As the introduction states emphatically, this is a book that is not sex workers asking for rescue. It's a work that is, quote, allowing our non-sex worker working readers to sit with us, but the collection itself is for us, end quote. And so, you know, I learned a lot from this book and reading the essays from sex workers who are very radical, who are fighting for and speaking of a safer future where sex work is decriminalized and destigmatized, where victims are not re-victimized. And the sex workers that write in this are just really openly and honestly sharing a piece of themselves and their experiences. So I really liked this one quote. I'm just going to mention it from the foreword by Selena the Stripper. And the quote is, "For a community that is constantly silenced and erased, spoken for and talked over, the gathering of so many voices here is powerful. We can speak, and it is time people listened. It is time for our perspectives to be treated as legitimate. It is time to include us in all that affects us. We are speaking, and it's time to listen." End quote. So, yeah, great, amazing, powerful essay collection. Okay, last but not least for the essays, I want to shout out one of my favorite books of all time. Like, not just this year, but of all time. And that is Kai Cheng Tom's I Hope We Choose Love, A Trans Girl's Notes from the End of the World. And this is, I think I have actually talked about this in past segments, but it's because I love it so much and I just want everyone to read it. And this is a collection of personal essays and poems where Kai Cheng Tom dives deeply into questions about the social movements today. And it's so healing. Like, this is such a book that is needed. And especially, like, when you're starting to feel burnt out or, like, just really down. I have picked it up a lot this year. I've really needed it. And I always think, too, about, she talks a lot about love, and obviously, like, it's called I Hope We Choose Love. There's always, like, a quote that I am constantly repeating in my head of, like, love that is accountable. And she so much more beautifully writes about this. But, again, not a long book. I think it's, like, 160 pages, maybe. So, definitely one that you could easily pick up for Nonfiction November. And hopefully one that you will love as much as I do. All right, now let's move to my favorite genre as a public historian. It's history. I also think that sometimes history can be the most hard to come to, right? Like, some history books, I feel like, are not written just for regular people. Like, and I'm saying that as someone who studies history, of like, what are they talking about? What is this word? I don't even know what this means. And I have to think about the same sentence like 6 times before I even understand what they're saying. So hopefully the history books that I'm about to suggest will be pretty easily accessible and something that you might be interested in. The first one I'm going to suggest is actually a graphic novel. And it is This Place, 150 Years Retold. It's a really, really beautiful graphic novel. And it's going through history. It's written by 11 different indigenous authors. It came out in 2019. This might be one that you want to ask for the holidays if you have gift-giving holidays coming up, because it is beautiful. And I mean, you know, you can get it from the library too. But, you know, just a suggestion. And you can keep the nonfiction reading going into the next few months, you know, it never ends. A much longer history, but one that I thought was extremely approachable, was one I listened to on audiobook. Now, this was a very long audiobook, but I was so invested that I mean, it flew by, and that was The Dead Are Arising by Les Payne and Tamara Payne. This came out in 2020. I believe it was a National Book Award winner. Might have been a finalist. Don't quote me. But it's really, really powerful history on Malcolm X. And that's actually a mixture of, like, journalism history. It's written incredibly incredibly amazingly. So definitely take that one, take a look at that one. But also, like, don't be afraid to listen to them. Like, if you're worried or stressed about, like, approaching a history book, like, check it out on audiobook, too, because that sometimes it makes it, like, a little bit easier, I think, personally. So those are kind of on history journalism. Another really great one, and this is going into true crime, which is awesome because I know our last Feminist Book Box pick was a true crime book, and even though I listened to this back in June, it has still stayed with me. And it's an excellent, excellently researched, wonderfully done true crime. And it's Last Call, A True Story of Love, Lust, and Murder in Queer New York by Elon Green. This is about the Last Call killer and the gay community of New York City that he preyed upon. And it pulled me in so deeply. This was another audiobook that I was extremely invested in that I finished very quickly, and I found myself listening to audiobooks, God, everywhere I went. Like, oh, I gotta go down the stairs? I better grab my audiobook to listen to it while I walk down the stairs. Like, that kind of audiobook. Which is actually, this book is in the same place, New York City. The Last Call killer was 80s, 90s. But it connects to another really approachable history book that I just started. I'm not too far in, but it's really short and really easy to read. And that is The Stonewall Reader, edited by the New York Public Library. Really great so far. And again, perfect pick for Nonfiction November because I don't think it's going to take too long to read. Okay, so these are just a few Nonfiction November suggestions. I could talk about nonfiction books all day because I've been really trying to make an effort to read a lot of nonfiction. At some point in my lifetime, I would like to read as many nonfictions as I read fiction, which is not happening this year for sure. Probably not happening next year, but maybe in the future. I'm just going to manifest that. And, you know, if you're reading other nonfiction genres too, like, I only mentioned a few genres here, but hey, like, read that cookbook, man. Like, that counts as nonfiction. Read that travel guide. Like, whatever you are reading that is nonfiction, I am completely here to support you. Very excited about Nonfiction November. I hope maybe one or two or all of these books pique your interest. And if you have read any of these, or are interested in reading any of these, just shoot me a message. I'd love to hear your thoughts on them and, like, your process as you read nonfiction. My Instagram is @bookedwithemma. And yeah, this is your reminder to hydrate and take care of yourselves this week as best you can. And to read some nonfiction if you can. And have a wonderful night, a wonderful day, a wonderful rest of your 24 hours, and I will talk to you guys soon. Bye.
This episode is brought to you in collaboration with Wild Gallery in Austin, Texas. Wild is an art gallery that features exclusively art created by Native American artists. If you're looking to gift fine art this holiday season, check out Wild Gallery's online store for stunning Native American art, including posters, prints, and original fine art at multiple price points. I have my eye on a piece called Isla the Monster Slayer by Navajo artist Sean Bayale. You have to go look at it, but at the center is a stunning Native woman in dark jeans, boots, and a tank top, and around her hand is this aura that trails behind her like she's about to throw some energy at an oncoming monster. I love it. And it's only $85. If you find it out of stock, it's because I bought it. But if I were going to splurge on a piece of art, it would definitely be Nicole Hatfield's piece called Sacred for $2,700. This somber piece is gorgeous. It features a Native woman's face close up. Her jaw is set, her eyes are determined, and her face is framed by beautiful braids in browns and blacks and whites. The word sacred is painted along the side of the canvas. The artist Nicole, who is a member of the Comanche tribe, implores us to remember that Native women are 10 times more likely than the rest of the population to be murdered. This art is hauntingly beautiful. Definitely scroll through everything Wild Gallery has to offer and consider purchasing a piece for yourself or a loved one this holiday season. And for those of you in the Austin, Texas area, make an appointment to see the art in person. Head to www.wild.gallery for more information. That's wild with a Y. So WYLD.gallery for more information.
Cousins. I could have used a better alliteration on that one. Regardless, welcome to the Feminist Book Club podcast. Today, we'll be talking about The Power of Knitting, Stitching Together Our Lives in a Fractured World by Loretta Napoleone. I'm your host, Natalia, and let's dive in. So the book itself is actually a fairly easy read, coming in at less than 200 pages, not including the knitting patterns that are in the back. It chronicles the kind of journey that the author, Loretta, has been on after her husband committed financial, crimes. There's not enough detail in the book to know if they're crimes, but he committed financial missteps that led to them being destitute, and she ended up divorcing him because he lied and all of this stuff. So it's the story of her picking her life back up and like getting herself together and collecting herself after this monumental shift. And she ends up falling back on knitting as a way to kind of move through this tumultuous period in her life. She was taught how to knit by her Italian grandmother who lived in fascist Italy. And just that bit alone is very, very interesting because it takes the quiet feminism of women who were born in the early 20th century and kind of she shows glimpses of how her grandmother very quietly subverted the narrative that Loretta would have heard around her at the time when she was growing up. Her grandmother gave her this beautiful craft that she could use for stress relief, for making things, for whatever. But within that time that they spent together, her grandmother also took the time to share her stories, share the stories of those around her, and quietly shift how Loretta thinks about the world. So right off the bat, 10 out of 10, big fan. It is not a difficult read. It is actually put together well. The story flows from the beginning of knitting and how there's the oldest fragment of knitted textiles dates back to 6500 BC and was discovered in a cave in Israel. Another one dating to 4200 BC came from a fishing village in Denmark. So it gives the explanation of how from nail binding, which is how you repair fishing nets, people started to knit and how that activity occurred throughout the world kind of at the same time. So no one place could say, oh, I invented knitting of any kind. And how women have been at the heart of those activities, right? You knit in the winter when you couldn't farm. You knit in the summer after chores so that you could, you know, get money through bartering clothes. You knit as a pioneer woman. You knit here, you knit there. And so kind of throughout these big moments in history, in the background are these women who are knitting. There's a particularly fascinating story about Robespierre and the French Revolution and these women who were knitting and sold their seats and how they've been maligned throughout history. It's such a good little blurb. But going to the feminism part, because I think it's a super interesting pivot, she discusses how any type of female craft at that time, knitting, crocheting, anything like that, was widely dismissed as an instrument to reinforce the male domination paradigm. The feminist movement was split and couldn't take a stand. So some women looked at knitting as a craft that bound women to their homes and occupied them by invisible, unrewarded labor and considered it one of the symbols of women's oppression. But another group of feminists thought, and this is in first wave feminism, thought that knitting itself could be an empowering political and revolutionary aspect that had been used throughout history. So in the founding of this country, you know, when the United States was declaring its independence from Britain on stolen land, the women in the revolution, you know, knitted the outfits that soldiers fought with, the socks that they used, all of these things, and kind of kept these men clothed. And you don't hear about them. You don't hear about how these clothes came to be and the work that went into them. You just hear about the men doing the deeds. And so these two camps ended up kind of not taking a stand and just considering knitting a personal choice, which is interesting because in first wave feminism, one of the big mantras was the personal is political. And I say that all the time, the personal is political. But it's an interesting kind of insight into first wave feminism by somebody who lived through it. Loretta was probably in her early teens when first wave feminism kind of happened. And then she talks about, you know, knitting a science. And throughout all of this, she's talking about her husband and her life and how, you know, the repetitive kind of motions of knitting and the comfort that it brings is really keeping her together. But the neuroscience part was also interesting to me as somebody who suffers from anxiety, that performing something repetitive and rhythmic, such as yoga or breathing into a small paper bag or knitting, induces relaxation, which we now know neutralizes the stress hormones. Scientists tell us that because knitting is a two-handed cross-body coordinated movement, it requires two sides of the brain to communicate with each other and share information effectively. And I can vouch for this because when I am sitting and knitting after a very long and stressful day, because I've had work, I've had my school life, just kind of my children, everything kind of bottling on, when I'm knitting, it's the only time that I have found that my brain kind of stops. And I'm having trouble embroidering because of carpal tunnel syndrome, which is my first love. Embroidery is my first love. But with knitting, I can just stop and I can't focus on anything but what I'm doing with my hands. I can knit, I can purl, I can knit, I can purl. And that takes up my whole life and my whole thing, and it kind of leaves no space for stress. She even talks about how with knitting, you can knit models of complex objects like a hyperbolic plane, which are spaces of negative curvatures, like a saddle, like the frills on a sea slug or whatever, the growth patterns of coral, the way the brain folds, that you cannot build, at least now, with paper or plastic because of the rigidity of the materials. But by using yarn or knitting needles, you can take something that is a ball and model these super complex mathematical models, which then helps us understand the world around us. It's so interesting. As I was reading this section, I don't know if my Instagram was listening to me or what, but I got an image, or I got on my explore page, I got a show of like these knitted objects. And one of the things that was knitted was an entire skeleton, from the teeth to the bones to the whole nine yards. And it's interesting how you can take one material and turn it into something else that we can then use to explore the world around us or to understand the world around us. She talks about knitting as a way to stimulate the hippocampus, which is what we use to read maps and stuff. And I've actually read papers on how the use of GPS has diminished our ability to topographically read an area and all of that. And it just goes to show that something that you think that's going to be kind of a nonsensical hobby, if you look into it, even the littlest amount, if you're curious about it, can prove to be illuminating and enlightening. And it has definitely been a great move for me personally. It's allowed me to connect with human beings, which I really needed after moving to a new area and not knowing anybody. And all in all, this book reinforced the idea that this was a good path for me to pick, and that, you know, these crafts that are not seen as useful really do matter and are important. And it is up to us as intersectional feminists to look at all of the ways that what we do kind of intersects these planes and explains just kind of everything around us. I don't know. Anyways, 10 out of 10 for the book. I highly recommend you get it. There's going to be a link down in the show notes. And if you do get it, I look forward to hearing from you. And if you don't get it, what crafts do you do? How do you relax? How do you kind of bring yourself down when you're spiraling out of control or not? And if you do knit, you know, also tag me in your pictures. I'd love to see your stuff. Anyways, this has been a book review. You can follow me on Instagram at stitchcraftandwizardry.com. You'll see pictures of my hats, which is what I'm making right now, and a sweater that I had to completely unravel, which was really depressing. You can also follow me on Twitter, where I am increasingly unhinged as we get closer to finals, at Nat San Paul. It was great talking to you, and I really hope you read this book. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.